Alan, how are you doing?
Hey, good. Are we doing a presentation or are we going to do an
interview? We're going to do a presentation and hopefully I'll give you some time for questions. We'll see what happens.
Great.
It's like you said, where does the information come from? And the question I'd ask you is, where does the words come from that are coming out of your mouth? Where are they coming from? Do we actually believe there are neurons running around having board meetings and putting words into the sentence? It's all coming from somewhere. And that's the big mystery.
Well, I think it's coming from the field. You know, it's like looking for the announcer inside the radio. You open it up, you're not going to find anything there. Yeah. We are non-local.
Yeah, that's the whole idea, is people like, who's doing the meditating? Who's doing, you know, all the stuff that we're talking about, the I. Nobody ever describes the story is, always remember who you actually are. You are not the actor on the stage. You are playing an actor on a stage. Big difference. Super. So you want me to do a presentation? I've got some stuff here.
It's like you are the observer. Okay, let's go for it. Go for it, Grant. We are ready for you.
Let me share my screen here.
Okay. It's 7 o'clock.
Oops.
Okay, can you see my screen?
Yeah, we see it.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so it starts. This is I was just working on this recently, and this is I thought I'd put together something called What I Learned in UFO School in 46 Years. So I've been at this for 46 years, and I can absolutely tell you I would be floored if I knew what was actually going to happen. I had my first sighting in 1975, and when I first saw it, it was very evident. It was very close. It was like, oh yeah, that's an extraterrestrial. They're looking out the windows at me as they fly by. I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, so it's in the middle of nowhere. I thought these aliens may be a little lost. What are they doing in my part of the country? There's nothing here to see. And everything has changed. And one of the main things that's sort of changed in the whole thing is the more I look at it, the more it doesn't seem to be UFOs. It's a much bigger top thing, UFOs. A lot of the stuff that I learned in 46 years really it's linked to UFOs, but it really doesn't have that much to do with UFOs. I say this now because I've always talked about this, but now someone used a line and I've stolen the line, is I at one point had to join UFO Sighting Anonymous, because in 1975 I had sightings. I was all excited. We were out there investigating this. It was flying there quite often in this town called Carmen. And I'd be out there every second night. I basically quit university to go and do this. I was just so enamored with what was going on. Had a lot of sightings. In the middle of 1976, I got tired because there was some on the ground. We couldn't surround them. We couldn't get near them. We could film them. They would interact with us and stuff like that. But we were just not able to actually pin this thing down. And so I published a book, and one of the best things that ever happened to me was the rejection letter I got. I got a number from Toronto, but the book on Charlie Red Star, which was all the sightings we had in 75, 76. And I was close five times. I was within 500 meters, I'd say five times. And you hear this story about people who are injured with UFOs being close contact. I say, well, I was close five times and nothing ever happened to me. But anyway, I had a rejection letter from a local publisher said, Mr. Cameron, you may believe in this kind of stuff, count me among the unbelievers. And at that point, I have never really looked at UFO sightings again. I sort of see it as sort of like, it's entertaining. The only thing it really will give you is the fact that, yes, something is going on. There's some reality, something's going on. But the more I've looked at the UFO sightings, the more it seemed to be much more complex. And what I say now, and these are my opinions I'm going to give you today, is that this thing is at least 1,000 times more complex than people think it is. People have it all pinned down because our left brain wants to, you know, put a bow on the thing and put the final chapter, and we got it all figured out. And, you know, we've won all the wars, and we've got, you know, all the equations figured out, and we've got the, you know, one piece of the puzzle to put in. And what I've found in my 46 years is we haven't even got a clue what's going on. It is much more complex. And you hear that from Phil talking about what he's learned. It's much more complex, much more involved, and much more spiritual than people think it is. One of the things I learned in the 46 years is the interdisciplinary thing. I learned this when I was at the university. I worked at university for 40 years. I wasn't a professor, but I worked with a lot of academics. And I remember I worked in the faculty club lounge, one of the most important jobs I ever had in my life, where the guy who was training me said, Grant, I want you to realize that these are academics. Don't get intimidated by these guys. I had presidents, vice presidents, deans. I dealt with academics for 40 years. And he said, don't let these guys intimidate you when they've had one too many beers. They're just like anybody else on the street. And I realized that academics are perhaps the worst people that can be used to study the UFO phenomena, because academics, what I found is they're very, very specialized. So they may be into molecular biology in one particular section of molecular biology, but don't get that guy to fix your tooth. Don't get him to fix your car. Don't get him to talk about philosophy. And I would have three deans that used to sort of discuss UFOs with me. And I remember the one was the dean of plant science, and he liked to play, you know, skeptic. And at one point I suddenly said, hey, like you're a dean of plant science. You know how to plant roses. You know nothing about UFOs. And he agreed with me. And that was the whole deal, is we have this idea that if somebody's a PhD, that they're very smart and they know everything. They're actually very, very specialized in very, very limited field of knowledge. And when you get them out of their field of knowledge, they have no time to look at any other fields. So the UFO field, I think, has to be interdisciplinary in terms of what we do in the UFO field. Because as you've been in this long enough, you know that it involves astronomy, it involves consciousness, it involves philosophy, it involves understanding quantum physics. And what you need is this interdisciplinary thing. And once we get down one particular field, then it's what we used to call PhDs. We used to call them piled higher and deeper. And it was all about ego. People would play games with them and say, good morning, doctor. And the guy would only have a master's degree, and nobody ever disagreed with it, because it's all about status. It's all about this whole idea that we have the answer to everything. But the interdisciplinary thing is, this is how reality works. That's sort of the bottom line I came with UFOs, is if you start to understand the anomaly of UFOs, you get to understand what the it's just showing you an anomaly about ultimate reality. And that's what it basically came down to. I never would have believed that in 1975, that's where I was going. I just figured this was straight an ET that was flying by Carmen, Manitoba, and got lost. And I happened to get lucky two nights in a row, and I happened to see it. And the second night it came directly at me. And a lot of the things I discovered in UFOs was 30, 40 years later, it suddenly occurred to me. And the one was the second night when it came at me, flew right at us. There was eight of us there, and it was down low, close to the ground. It came right at us and got within maybe half a mile, and then made this left-hand turn and flew off into the northeast. And it was like 35 years later, 40 years later, I suddenly think, like, why did it come at me? I mean, if it was flying, why wouldn't it just go from the west into the northeast? Why did it have to come at me, make this turn, and then disappear off on the other side? And then I suddenly realized that this thing was less... this was not as random as I thought it was, that a lot of this stuff was probably planned, that this was the way it was supposed to be, and they were to drag me in. And when I started to look back on the cases in 1975, it agreed that a lot of the stuff that happened was definitely could not have been random. So interdisciplinary is very important, that we get everybody involved and that everybody has a piece to the puzzle. The anomaly is what I just mentioned before, and that is the idea that the UFO phenomena is just another anomaly. And the whole idea behind anomalies is we always figure that we've got the world all figured out. We got one piece of the puzzle to put in, and the anomalies show you that one of your pieces is wrong. And the analogy was sort of given to me in one of my sort of moments where I was given some material was you got wrong blocks. Then in 1492, we thought the world was flat, and the world was flat. And we thought the sun went around the earth. And then there's the story, what would the earth look like if it was actually flat and the sun did go around the earth? It would look exactly the same way as it does right now. That in that period of time, the world was flat and the sun didn't go around the earth and everything was solid and all these kind of things. There was time and space, but the more, the wider your perspective is, the more material you get, the more you realize, yeah, I didn't have that right. No, that's not really right. And your idea of how reality works is going to be increased by the more material that you put in. And it's the whole idea of Donald Hoffman brings up, that everything that we're talking about is basically just a desktop icon, that you're never really going to be able to understand reality itself. Everything is going to be sort of a name in between, or an object in between, that we're studying these objects and we think that we've got it all figured out, and we're not even close. And the anomalies are telling us we're not close. So that's why UFOs is so important, because it's a very, very clear anomaly that tells us something's wrong. The belief you have about all this stuff in the world is wrong. So anomalies are very important. In the same, I wrote a book called Contact Modalities, where I talk about all these different things where you can get into the field. And there's different things like near-death experiences and channeling and psychics and mediums and all this kind of stuff. These are all just sort of different weird anomaly items that tell us that we got something wrong. And these people would not be able to do what they're doing. UFOs would not exist if people had it understood. If you had all the pieces together, this would not be happening. The reason that the anomalies are there means you've got something wrong. And when you study the anomaly and you figure it out, you're going to learn something about ultimate reality that will help you expand the world and make the world a more complex place and a better place, or whatever you want to use out of it. We talked about this at the beginning. This again comes to the idea of the contact modalities. And that is that I believe that everything is a field. We're in a field. We're just at a level in the field, and everything is there. All the material is there. And it's the ability to access the field, to get into the field and to get the material out of the field and bring it back into what we would call our conscious reality. And there are people who can do it. They have modalities for getting in the field. And it would be very smart to listen to these people and to watch them rather than, you know, stating this is not possible, therefore you can't channel and you can't do mediumship and UFOs don't exist and all this kind of stuff. That's just the what I call the left brain interpreter in the left brain of the person that fills in the holes. It's an actual piece of the brain where when the world becomes inconsistent, the left brain interpreter's job is to fill a hole. And basically what it does, it grabs the first thing that comes into its head and it throws it in there. And we know two things based upon the research that was done at the Nobel Prize winning lab that did the split brain research. Number one, it is almost always wrong, if not always wrong. The thing that it sticks into the hole to make the world consistent again. And the second thing is once the person has made the decision with that idea, they never change. And when you try to confront them, even though you can explain, this is why you picked this item in this experiment we did, the person will fight and become very antagonistic about the fact and defend this view, even though it makes no sense. And that's where I maintain skepticism comes from. Skepticism is just people's left brain interpreter that is filling the hole for an anomaly. Something happens, the left brain can't handle this. This is not how the world's supposed to work. And it just sticks something in there and then sticks to that decision. And that's when the fights sort of begin. So I mentioned before contact modalities, there's all these different ways to get in the field and all these people are doing anomalies. And that's the people we should be watching. That's where I get away from the UFO sighting thing, is the UFO sighting thing will tell you that something's going on. But one of the high level intelligence, I made a contact to confirm with them whether this is true. And I was told lights in the sky produce no usable information. So it's basically telling you, yes, something's going on, but it's not until you talk to the people who are interacting with the intelligence. It's not until you talk to the people who are in the field that you're going to start to learn what's going on. You can't learn it by standing on the outside and observing. This gets into Bohm's, the implicate and expletive order, that there's stuff that's outside of our normal order that we have, and that a lot of this material is not accessible, but you can't access it. It's the ability to access it. And the field idea comes to this thing where 40% of all experiencers is actually higher than that. 40% of all experiencers say at one point during their experience, they knew the answer to everything in the universe, or 20% or 21% said they knew the answer to everything about themselves. So it's about 60%. So 40% of experiencers knew everything in the universe about in their experience. 31% of people in near-death experiences say the same thing. At one point during their experience, they knew the answer to everything in the universe. And when the experience was ending, in both cases, they said, oh, I'm going to remember this. And all they remembered was at one point they knew the answer to everything in the universe. And I would, of course, ask these people, and I never believed this would come down to UFOs. I would ask these people, well, you had this UFO experience. Well, how do you know you knew everything? How do you know there wasn't number 6, 7, 8 on the far side of the universe they forgot to tell you about? And they will say almost the same thing that I said about my experience is, I really don't know. I'm really not sure, but I just know. I just know I knew everything. And this is this absolute certainty that comes in these mystical experiences, that comes with absolute certainty, which is the hardest part to explain. It's almost like you've seen the information before, then you're shown it again and you go, oh, okay, yeah, I remember. You were shown it before, and it comes with this absolute certainty that you're not questioning it. So I had my two experiences, 2012, 2017, and minor experiences, but this idea where you know for sure that what you're being told is for real. And this field idea goes to Bashar, where Bashar says, we come to you in your dreams because now you're in our world. And that is where you get this idea where I've moved off the ET thing, where it's this field and all these entities are at these higher vibrating levels and that they're interacting with the world. And as Bashar says, it's like almost like he comes from the world of dreams, where this is they're able to talk to you. And when your left brain, that's the whole idea behind the dream thing. It, when your left brain is shut down at night, when it's quieted down, that's when they're able to talk to you. When your left brain is talking and the little voice is going, you have so much noise in your head that you can't pick up the signal. The signal is there for everybody to pick up. But the experiencers are in this field, whether it's their experience on board a ship, or whether it's their experiences and dreams, a lot of them will say, no, I don't think I've been on a ship, but they talk to me in my dreams all the time. And it's the same sort of thing where material is being given and the people are sort of in this field. Surrender is one I learned in psychedelics. I think it applies across the board. And that is the rule that I learned. And I actually came across somebody who actually came up with the same rule. And that is surrender is the only rule. Believe me, surrender is the only rule. You cannot get into a psychedelic experience. That's the block. You have to have the ego crushed in order to get into the mystical side of things. And we know with near-death experiences, when they describe the people who are having the sort of evil near-death experience, where they're having these horrible near-death experiences, one of the studies showed that one of the key things is these people refuse to let go. That is the same thing that happens in psychedelics. If you decide that you're going to fight whatever they put in front of you, get ready for the ride of your life. You want to describe hell, they can show you hell beyond anything you can even imagine. You have to surrender. It is a key, I believe, a key law of the universe, but I don't think I ever would have believed that in 1976 when I saw this UFO fly in front of the car the first night, fly right at me the second night. I never would have realized that this would be where we would go with this thing. And it's just gotten more and more complex as I go along. As I mentioned, psychedelics is this thing where surrender is a key part in healing. You'll hear a lot of these cases with the left brain interpreter will say, oh, it's just spontaneous remission. And it's like, well, who the hell is that? And it's like, you name it. You just put a name in there and then you fight it. No, it's just spontaneous remission. A lot of people who have spontaneous remission on fourth stage cancer, we'll talk about that. I just gave up. I just said, okay, that's it. I'm prepared to die. And boom, they're suddenly healed. And so this is in there. With the being thing, it's the same sort of thing. I always now laugh at this thing where I always say, like, why does an alien come to you? And there's actually, I was just reading John Mack's Passport to the Cosmos, and he was talking about this, where these people believe they had these, they wake up and there's a being standing in the room, and the being is trying to make them as scared as possible. And they believe that the being was there to steal their soul. They're absolutely convinced of that. And so I basically said, so why does a being come into your room and wake you up and go, Ellen, wake up, wake up, wake up. And then you wake up and go, oh my God, an alien's in my room. And then they go, okay, go back to sleep. And I think it's dissociation. It's getting you to surrender, to absolutely give up. Because I've had so many people, I said, so what do you do? They said, I pulled the covers over my head and went to sleep. I mean, that's the last thing you do. If you were under threat with this being standing beside your bed, what, you pull the covers over your head and go to sleep? And it's what they're doing, I think, is they're forcing this surrender, this disassociation. Now he's ready to go, because a lot of the abduction experiences you'll again see is this idea that it starts with an out-of-body experience. And so the question comes down, what's really going on here? And so the alien encounter, I think, was pretty funny, because you hear this all the time and it makes no sense why a being would actually scare the living daylights out of you, wake you up, scare you, and then put you back to sleep. And that's when the experience takes place. Oneness and separation. Oneness, I believe, absolutely is the key message. 54% of all experiencers will claim they were talked to about oneness and love. And the separation thing, I basically say all that you would consider to be evil in the modern world is created by one thing only, the mistaken belief in separation. If you believe everything is one, we are all connected, we are part of everything, then you can no longer steal and hurt. And you have to realize you are part of the thing, like a cell in the body, like a bee in the beehive. that you have your position to do. And when a cell goes rogue and decides it's going to duplicate and be its own little world and not play the oneness game, then you got a cell that's called a cancer cell. A lot of literature will actually go through this, whether you're talking UFOs or others. This is Bashar, one of his famous four or five laws of the universe. The one are the all, and the all are the one. This is this idea of the oneness principle. It's all one thing. I believe it is the key message. Brett Oldham, who really did not like the Greys, he actually said if they hadn't paralyzed him, he would have tried to kill him. He was so angry at the Greys. And he talked to the tall Grey on board the ship and he confronted him and he said, "So what's your concept of God?" And he said, the tall being said, "We are one with the one who is all." And Brett said he was so floored by what the guy said, he had to sit down. And then at that moment, they showed him a 3D holographic image of a formula and said, "You have a disease on your planet called cancer." And he said, "Yes, well, this is the cure." And they said, "Well, give me a piece of paper. I got to write this thing down." And he got so obnoxious and fighting to get a piece of paper that they actually let him out of the room. But he talked about the oneness message. This is one of the channelers, I'm going to forget his name.
Paul Selig. This is Paul Selig.
Paul Selig, yeah. Paul Selig is one of the channelers. I've gotten more and more interested in channelers. So this is what Paul Selig says. "You cannot be the light and hold another in darkness. If you wish to justify that, you may. But you will accrue the punishment that you will give another. You have to put yourself into the darkness with them. You will not be in the light. You cannot know truth when you deny the divine." So his whole basic concept is there is only the divine. And that when you decide that you're going to separate something from the divine and say that's not divine and stick it into the darkness, it will drag you into the darkness with it. And whatever you choose to damn or whatever and whoever you choose to damn will damn you back. Whatever you bless will bless you in return. It's this very basic concept that it's all divine and that we're trying to separate the divine. We're the divine and these people and these things are not divine and moving them. But when you move them into the darkness, it drags you into the darkness with it. Here's this where he said this all divine. The first lesson, this is Edgar Cayce. This goes back almost like 100 years. The first lesson for the first 6 months should be one. Oneness of God, oneness of man's relationship, oneness of force, oneness of time, oneness of purpose, oneness in every effort, oneness. So this message has been around for quite a while. And when you actually look at it and look at the world today, that is the problem. We're moving more into separation, me versus you, my country versus your country, my race versus your race, my religion versus your religion. It's separating more and more and more, this division thing. And the basic concept that I think they're trying to get across is you either get the oneness thing together or you are going to destroy yourself. You cannot keep separating. You got to realize you're all divine. You're all part of the one. And it's time to act as part and do what you can to make the universe a better place. This is Einstein basically saying the same thing. Separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion, he called it, of consciousness. Our task must be to free ourselves from this self-imposed prison and through compassion to find the reality of oneness. So when you get the oneness thing, it's not only the idea of us all working together as one and realizing we're all part of the same ecosystem and part of the one galaxy. And it gets to this idea of how do they get here? How does this intelligence get here? And the whole idea is it may all be one thing. There is no time, there is no space, there is only here, there is only now, there is only one thing. In fact, there was the guy from Brian Bender, and I actually asked him on a panel and he didn't answer it, but he talked about in one article or one CBS interview, he talked about the fact that the Defense Department had actually done a study on interdimensionality of the UFO phenomena. They'd actually done it. And what they were looking at is perhaps they're here, it's just a different here. And that goes to the oneness concept. They may not be coming from anywhere. They are here. It is all here. It is all now. It is all, and this whole idea where at the end I have this thing about abduction, DMT, OBEs, where the OBE that you may be going not outside yourself, you're going within yourself. When you die, you go within yourself. It's just a different vibration. It's all within. And there is, as John Wheeler, the Princeton physicist said, there's no out there, out there. This whole concept that maybe it's all right here, right now. And that's how it works. We make these assumptions, almost like the world is flat, the sun goes around the earth. It looks like they're coming from somewhere else, this sort of thing. But when you start looking at, is there time and space? If a psychic says to you, you know, you're gonna have a car accident tomorrow, and you do, you gotta start questioning time and space, whether these things are illusions. And if they are things that we make up, then how does the actual reality work? Telepathy, same thing. We have this idea that our mind is going into somebody else's mind. It may be that it's all just there and that you just use your mind to access the Akashic field and you pull the material out of the field. And we're all in the same field and you're not really going anywhere to read somebody's mind. You're just reading it from the field. Vibration is one of the key ones, I think, as well. Oneness is one. The other one is vibration. You'll see on a lot of literature, people will say, if you start thinking of things in terms of vibration, you're going to get things right rather than time and space and stuff, that things are vibrating at different levels. And you'll hear this in psychedelic stuff, in experiencers talking about this vibration, that the vibration is changing and that you're sort of moving into a different vibration, which would be a different world or a different level or whatever. And in the last slide, the one thing I forgot was a very interesting one where people say, no, I was actually taken on board a ship. I was this sort of stuff. I have done a lot of work on psychedelics. And one of the psychedelics that really poses a problem for this idea is DMT, because Strassman did a lot of people in the 1990s in New Mexico on a study, and half of the people had alien experiences, and a lot of them had abduction experiences. I have a guy who's an AI expert who actually may be listening to this, who actually told me, he said, I had a classic abduction experience on DMT. I said, yeah, really? He said, yeah, I was on a table. What were they doing? They were working on my head. They were like some brain operation or something. I couldn't see the beings. I could see their arms. And so the question is, he was DMT. This is a 10-minute experience on a couch. He's not going anywhere. And so this gets this whole idea. And one of the stories was that Strassman actually stopped the experiments because he was so blown away by these people seeing these beings, and he had seen them himself. He had the experience, which he keeps very quiet, but he had the experience himself where the beings came through this waterfall of fire and said, now you see, now you see, now you see. And he started these experiments with people, and he was blown away by this whole idea that people are seeing these beings and there's these crossovers. And that's what you see when you see the contact modalities. You start to see these crossovers, that what happens in the UFO experience is also happens in the DMT experience. It happens in the out-of-body experience. It happens in OBE experiences. And you start wondering, is this all the same thing? Vibration, I think, if we start looking at things in terms of vibration rather than here and there, I think we'll start to get it. Even if you look at Niels Bohr, who was with the quantum atom, he even talks about this thing, about the vibration of the atom, that there's no matter as such. And here's this guy that was, you know, one of the top guys. It may have been Max Planck, but it was either Max Planck or Bohr said, there is no matter as such. And that what keeps this thing in its vibration, these atoms. And you go back down to this thing and you see this vibration thing all the way through creation. Non-locality is again the big one, where if the experiment with the two particles where they sort of are able to talk with each other at distance, faster than time and space, then you get this non-locality. Or if you get remote viewing, where the remote viewer people, Russell Targ says, it's just as easy to remote view on the other side of the earth as it is in the next room. It is just as easy to remote view in the past and the future as it is in the present time. And this whole idea that everything may be non-local. And when you get in the physical world, we get this impression that there's locality, when in fact the whole universe may be non-local, and that it's just an impression. It's sort of an interpretation that we make based upon the limited perception that we have. multiple lives changes everything. One of the biggest experiences of my life in the UFO thing was I went to the UFO conference and saw Dr. Michael Newton lecture. And that got into the 7,000 people, the life between lives things. Everything changes if multiple lives is real. I didn't have that idea when I first started, but you start looking at this idea of contracts, whether we have contracts, whether our experience, UFO experience, whether we're in this field. The book I'm actually writing right now is the 10, or the 11 things had paranormal events that were given to us in the modern world to change the paradigm. And I do a lot about this whole thing about multiple lives, about contracts that we may be coming in, that we all agreed to come in on a contract to raise the consciousness through the UFO. And some other people are coming in on a contract to do something else. And there's these giant plays and we're all coming in. And that was what Michael Newton started. And a lot of people in the UFO people are starting to talk about this thing, this idea of the agreements that we, if it's multiple lives, we came into the world to do something and that we all may have made this agreement to come in at this time and this place in the middle of this mess. And we came in for a particular reason and that we all have a job to do. And we're in this giant play. We are not the actor on the stage. We are in a play. We are an actor on a stage, but we are elsewhere. We are the observer. We are the silence between the words, all that kind of stuff. This is Ron Johnson, who I think is one of the most important stories. I'm just trying to get him to finish off his book because he's not very well. He said, I think it has something to do with decisions made pre-existence. I beg God and Jesus for these to stop, because he had these very sexual experiences. He was a Mormon guy. He just couldn't handle it when they first started. But after many, many prayers, they kept coming. They told me that I had no right and that I was programmed from birth for these things to happen. And so you have him say that, and you have a number of others. Chris Bledsoe said the same thing. If you see his regression from 2008, the John Max associate at Harvard, his associate from Harvard said, when did you first encounter these beings? And he said, they have been with me since before I was born. And that's the whole thing. If we have these pre-agreements to come in, everything changes. You have to take a reevaluate everything that's happening. Consciousness and is one of the big ones. Consciousness is primary. This is one of the things I was given in my 2017 download. If the world is made out of little nuts and bolts, that's one world with certain rules and regulations. But if everything's made out of consciousness, that's a whole different world. But all the rules are going to change. And you see this in quantum physics. You see this in all sorts of modalities. People talking about paranormal things, this idea that consciousness is primary. And you see a lot of the early quantum guys confirming this, that consciousness is primary. Where we got off the base, and I'm not sure, I may have a slide coming up where I'll skip if I do. But what we started to work on was we moved from explorative to exploitive. And so before World War II, we were into trying to figure out, how does the universe work? Why is there the dual slit experiment doing what it's doing, the action at a distance, all these different things. And we were trying to figure out the philosophical reasoning behind this kind of stuff. As soon as World War II came, it was the old idea of shut up and calculate. And you could use the quantum equations to build stuff. And we had 200 dimensions during World War II that we invented: radar, jet engines, plastic explosives, proximity fuse, synthetic rubber. There was all these things. And suddenly the military realized, oh, we can use this. We don't need to answer the philosophic questions. Just calculate, just keep making stuff. And that's where we've moved away. Is there's nobody in the very few people in the science world who are trying to figure out the philosophical implications of what's happening. It's all the thing. And this even comes into ATIP, that unless you have something that you're going to sell, unless you have something that's going to help the military industry, you're not going to get funded. You're not going to get funded because you have a good idea and you want to find out how something works. It's a lot of funding is done now by contractors, and they want return on investment. So they want you to basically come up with some sort of thing that's going to work for it. Jacques Vallée is the one that started. I used to think he was nuts. We are dealing with yet unrecognized level of consciousness, independent of man, but closely linked to the earth. I do not believe anymore that UFOs are simply spacecraft of some race of extraterrestrial visitors. This notion is too simplistic to explain their appearance, the frequency of their manifestations through recorded history, and the structure of the information exchanged with them during contact. I used to think he was absolutely insane. The more I look at it, the more I think this is where the UFO community will be going. This is much, it may have an ET component, but it may be the same as we are claiming we're humans playing humans on a stage. They're playing the aliens. Everybody's playing a role. And when we close our eyes in death, we suddenly realize, oh, it was just a big play. And I was playing a play. And now I'm no longer Grant. Now I'm going to go do something else. Or Whitley Strieber's wife, who came to him after he died and said, Whitley, I'm no longer Anne, but I'll always be Anne to you. And she's off to do something else. We are just playing a role on a stage, and that this all may be just things to play in this play to raise consciousness of the earth. We all have our little roles to play, and we are the ones that wrote the script. This is the psychedelic thing, this whole oneness thing. My ego was crushed, and I realized that everything was alive, conscious, and connected. And this is when the surrender takes place, and these people have these enlightenment experiences. And you see this over and again in these mystical experiences, that you realize these key components. Everything's alive, everything's conscious, and everything's connected. And when you realize that and really believe it, you stop destroying the world. People will say, oh, the government knows what's going on. They know it's ET. Why do they quit lying or whatever? This is Jim Semivan, who actually had face-to-face encounter with the intelligence in the early 1990s. He said, how do you make sense of it when there does not appear to be any there? The phenomena seems to work on another level. Consciousness, dimensions, unknown to our science. I do not think he's lying. I think that the people on the top, they may have bodies. They do have bodies, they at least one body. They have crafts. They may have a craft that's completely intact, that they can't fly. They have all this stuff. But in terms of understanding, unless that being has a passport from Zeta Reticuli, how do you know where it came from? And the people at the top all seem to be saying the same thing, that yes, UFOs are real. Yes, we have hardware, but we haven't got a clue what's going on. Everything is an activity inside consciousness. That is something that Deepak Chopra says, which I think is very key, that we have to start looking at in the UFO communities, this consciousness thing, that it all may be just action inside consciousness, that we're trying to, the left brain wants to put everything into nouns. So it wants to translate everything into levels and colors, and there's this and then that, and then naming stuff, almost like the idea that the Tao that can be named is not the Tao. The idea that we want to name everything, we want to put you know, levels and stuff. Or the guy that, the one guy who dies, and he's there, and he encounters this being, and he said, what level am I on? And the guy goes, and the being goes, level? What do you mean level? There's no levels. What do you mean level? You're in the water. It's like you're trying to level, give levels. You're in, it's all one thing, and that you're moving sort of towards the light. And the closer you get to the light, the more you can see, the better you can see. And we are at sort of at the bottom of the ocean. We can't really see anything because we're in the darkness. Everything is both. I like this one. This one just came up recently. Everything is both particle and wave. On Earth, we are more particle than wave. Over here, I experience more wave than particle. It's this whole particle wave question. I think this was, this is Diane Pasolka. And you've got, do you remember with Diane Pasolka, is she's inside the Invisible College. So she's talking to a lot of these high level people who aren't talking to you and I, but they're talking to her. So we do know that time is of another dimension. We don't fully understand it. We do know, based on the research of people like Einstein, that we have an illusion that time is linear. Well, it's not. So there are other dimensions that can impact our own and influence our own and even dictate our own reality. And we're not aware of those. So it could be something that is interdimensional, is an interdimensional breakthrough or something like that. The importance of this is Diane Pasolka, I always say, you listen to the high level people and listen to what they're saying. So she's inside this thing. They're saying the same thing. They're saying, well, we really don't know where this thing is coming from or exactly what it is. But the materialists will always go back and say, no, it's just the brain. It's just, you know, something that you're seeing is believing. I still maintain there is no football game inside the TV. No matter what people want to tell me, there is no football, little players playing in there. And Elvis is not alive. He's not singing in my radio. It's coming from somewhere else. The eye is not in the head. The brain is part of the thing, but the actual eye is not there. Spirit versus ego. This is, I think, an important thing that I never would have believed with the UFO thing. Was a lot of people will complain about this or that or whatever, and the question always comes down: is that your spirit talking, or is that your ego talking? And a lot of times, what you'll hear in the UFO community, if you listen, people are talking about ego, me, I, this, whatever. I don't think the spirit is going to complain. It's the old idea that anything that is good and perfect will be in the spirit world, and anything that's negative will be ego. So if the person's talking negative, that's their ego talking. If they're talking positive, it's the spirit talking. I'll skip this. This is this idea where this comes down. Now we have a lot of this thing about the sort of the evil alien thing that we're being oppressed, or people having good lives or having bad lives. And you go back to Civil War or whatever, we look at lives we had before, and we got killed in this life as something. We don't take that and say, well, I got killed in Civil War, I'm still upset about that, and you're like, I'm going to really worry about that. You start to realize this idea that it's a multiple life thing, and that we are living these multiple lives, and we're going to die in a number of different ways. And then when you get into multiple lives, everything's experience. It's not good or bad, it's just experience. Everything is an experience, and that we are the ones writing the script, and we may have planned for the way that we died. Complexity is an important element, where a lot of people want to sort of wrap this thing up, that this is get the thing, the government's going to give us the answer, let's tell us what's going on. And I say this whole idea, it is so complex. The more you look at it, the more questions there are. You may pick up some stuff and understand more where we're going, because in 1975, I never would have realized that consciousness and all this other stuff was involved. But the more I look at it, the more complex it gets. And that's where I say it's going to be way less physical than people think it is. It's going to be way more spiritual than people think it is. And a lot of people are going to be upset about that. And it's going to be at least 1,000 times more complex, that we want to say, make the world into a very simple place. And we have all the answers. That's the ego wants to say, I have this all under control, I got it all figured out, and it doesn't. We have no clue. The disclosure, this is a disclosure thing, where people are basically pushing this issue that the government knows and they should just tell us it's ET or whatever. And I don't think that all these government people, the number of people, there'd be very limited number of people who actually understand the principle of this thing. And those people are going to basically, I think, admit that they really don't know. One of the other examples would be when Tom DeLonge was in the Lockheed Skunk Works skiff. He talked to the head scientist at Skunk Works, and Skunk Works head scientist said, so I just want to know how to get here. How does it work? And he said, I think consciousness is involved. And then the site scientist said, oh, now you're talking. And for 45 minutes, he said, that's all the guy wanted to talk about is consciousness. So they may know it's consciousness. They may still not know how it works, but they have these little clues. And that's why I think they're going to Congress. They're trying to get money because they can't figure it out in the black world. And they want to open it up to the academic world to try to get people to help them figure this thing out. Because I don't think they have the answers that people think they have. This is Paul Selleck. I've become so impressed with certain channelers. I used to watch UFO Experiences. I still watch them, but these channelers, I just can't believe when I go back and reread them, and I realize, man, these people are talking the same thing. Because when I first read them, I didn't have the knowledge I have now. When I go back and read them again, then I realize, like, wow, they're talking truth here. So Paul Selleck is one of the people I really recommend. And the other one is Seth, which I think I have a thing here. This is where he talks about it's all divine. It's a simple thing. It's all one thing. Yeah, and we want to create darkness. We basically take things and put them in the darkness. We take them out of the divinity, and you ain't going anywhere as long as you're separating stuff from the darkness. You cannot enter what he calls the upper room. Seth is one that just blew me away. I'd read her years ago. This is where the New Age thing starts. And Seth basically comes down to this idea. You create your own reality. There is no other rule. This is basically what UFO is now talking about, this idea that consciousness is primary, the participatory universe, or I think I even have a thing here. This I think is John Wheeler. We are not only observers, we are participators. In some strange sense, this is a participatory universe. Physics is no longer satisfied with insights only into particles, fields of force, into geometry, or even into time and space. It's a participatory world. We're starting to understand this, that we are, and there's even the one idea that I really liked, was that God did not create the heaven and the earth. God created the sparks of the divine, and we are the ones creating the heaven and the earth. We create the good, we create the bad, we create all this sort of stuff. And the idea is for us all to make a better universe, a more complex universe, a more grand universe, and that we are not victims of God putting us in certain situations. We are actually creating it because it's all consciousness, and the world is created from consciousness, and we are using our consciousness to create the world, and we can make a good world or a bad world. And it's up to us. It's just us all going together, and we are all observers. We're all doing it. Even Jesus had this in the Bible. You go back and you see that Jesus even described this. Because you have so little faith, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing shall be impossible for you. And you see that in a whole different life, this whole idea, it's a participatory universe, and that whatever you believe you can do, you can actually do. We have this limited view of our intelligence, and it is much more complex, and we are much more powerful than we think we are, and we are the ones building the universe. Again, this is John Wheeler, no phenomena is a phenomena until it is an observed phenomena. The universe does not exist out there independent of all acts of observation. Instead, it is some strange sense, a participatory universe, almost like Bashar says, what you put out comes back. You hear this over and over again, and in the UFO experiences are saying the same thing. Now I'll get into the last little things, and this is the idea of the no ETs. And it's not that there may not be an ET component. There was a group of beings that wanted me to write a book, and I probably will. And they basically, what they had said was, if you want us to be ETs, we can be ETs. We can take you to our planet and show you our planet. But we're actually just from here. We've always been here, and you are the visitor. And you hear this over and over again. Nancy Tremaine said the same thing when she asked her. And what that's what I do is I say to people, I say, hey, you ever asked the alien if he was an alien? And then people come back and say, no, he said, not really. That would not best describe who I am. And this, a lot of them, Nancy Tremaine said the same thing. We are from here. We've always been from here. We're not alien to this planet. And this whole idea, it's all here. It's all now. And what happens, I believe, is that the ETs have to talk to you at the level that you're at. So as we go along, the story that they tell us is going to be more complex. A lot of people say ETs are lying. For example, 1896, we say, oh, this is ET. I say, you really think it's ET? 1896, 1897, they were flying around. They actually crashed one in Texas. And the people would say to these guys who are dressed kind of strange, were flying these wooden ships with propellers and sails, and they're flying around the United States. And they say, where are you from? And they said, we're from Mars. And everyone, oh, okay, they're from Mars. Because 1890, everybody was looking at the canals on Mars and believed Mars was. And now, who would believe that wooden ships flew in from Mars? And this is the whole idea. So to talk to you at your level, Barbara Streisand's stepson is a UFO experiencer. And what he told me, the beings had told him, was that when we come into your world, we come into your head and we see what's in your head. And that's what we use to teach you. So if you're in fear, we're going to use fear to teach you. We can do nothing else. We can only use what's in your head. So they talk to you at whatever level you're at, whatever you believe, that you're going to use your belief systems to try to get a lesson across to you. It is not a direct lesson that we are from here. And this is exactly how it works. As we advance, the story that they're going to tell is going to get more advanced. And that's what you see. First, we said, oh, they're from Mars. They're from the backside of the moon. They're from Venus. And even the Canadian one that was from Uranus. They said, we're from Uranus. It's like 370 degrees below zero there or whatever it is. And they said there's 750 million people living here. Well, who would believe that now? There's 750 million people living on Uranus. But that was in the 1950s. And then suddenly we suddenly realized, oh, they couldn't be from Venus to Mars because we had ships going there. We had, you know, exploration visits. So then they changed. They were from, then they said from Zeta Reticuli, and they were from Pleiades. Well, Pleiades is 400 stars. Why wouldn't you get more specific as to what star you're from in Pleiades? And even Sherry Wilde, if you know Sherry Wilde, Sherry Wilde talks about her being was called Da. They wrote a book, and the manuscript, the guy who was doing the manuscript, the publisher said, hey, he said he's from Andromeda. And she said, yeah, he's from Andromeda. And he said, well, Da can't be from Andromeda. He's a gray. You said he's a gray. Yeah, he's a gray. Well, he's got to be from Zeta Reticuli then. So she went to him and said, hey, you said you're from Andromeda. You're a gray. Are you actually from Andromeda? And he said, well, he said, are you actually an alien? He said, well, no, that would not best describe who I am. I'm an etheric being on a mission in the cosmos for the Creator. And that's what I believe, starting to believe. We're all etheric beings. We're playing roles. We're coming in. We're pretending to be humans. They're pretending to be aliens. Everybody's playing a role, and we're playing this game. And it gets more advanced as we go along, as our understanding of the universe works. Now we're into multidimensional. So now it's like we're in the fifth dimension, we're in the 11th dimension. And the story is changing as we go along. The disclosure thing, I basically say, anybody who thinks that the government is going to come out and say, this is ET, I would say I'm going to be very surprised if that happens, because I firmly believe that they understand this is for real. This is very complex, and they really don't have the answers as to what's going on. That's what they told Trump. That's what they've told high-level people. I've heard numerous times talking about, even Elizondo talks about that when they ask them, is this on world or off world? Well, hang on, there's their options, as if they have some idea. And they basically say over and over again, we don't know what it is. We know it's not us. We know it's not the Russians. We know it's not Chinese. It's very complex, but I don't think they have the answers that people think. We're playing, this is the idea, we're playing a role. Nancy Tremaine, I mentioned this before, she basically confronted the beings and they said, no, not aliens. This is what she wrote in the middle of the night. This is where you get these inspirations where when the left brain is shut down, she woke up in the morning, this was written. Realities or illusions are part of the delusion that we have created. We are living in a delusional illusion of our own making. We are all players in this fictional theater that we perform for our creators. A muse existing for our audience. The stage is set at birth and our performance has begun. Ego is an illusion. I think we'll skip over this. What time have I got here?
We have another 10 minutes, but I have some questions because you bring up a lot of,
let me go through a few more slides because this gets into this thing about, is this ET? This is Yossi Ronan, who has one of the top 100, for the last 6 months, top 100 selling books. I don't know if he's outselling you, Alan, but I always quote this, and I have a lot of conversation. I have another one with Yossi coming up. He's an Israeli, had an experience in LA when he was young. And this is, he had the beings who actually changed. And it was very important that the beings, when he saw the beings, they were green beings. And he said when they left, what they did is they all held hands and they made a circle and they started to move. And this was, it seemed like a very physical experience. And they started to move and they went round and round and round, faster, faster, faster. And then they became translucent, like Mark Sims describes Tejabar being translucent. They became translucent and then they became like light. And then the light got closer and closer and turned into a little ball and disappeared. So the question is it actually a physical being or is it a ball of light? And if it's a ball of light, do these eat bacon, eggs, toast, and coffee? So this is what Yossi said they told him. The way you see us is defined by you. When we visit your world, we temporarily have a physical body defined in a certain way, but it is not the only form or our original essence. In our dimension, there is no need for a physical body defined in a particular way as in yours. You share the definitions of reality that are given to you, but you are not yet aware of it. We believe everything is physical. You can't move out of the physical. They just say, you just don't know how it works. They understand reality, and that's the anomaly. This, I mentioned this Sherry Wilde thing already. She asked him, are you an alien? And he said, no, not really. And then the good evil debate. I'll sort of leave that. I'm actually doing a book called The Evil Alien, The Search for the Great Satan. So I'm going to deal with this. This is one of the most controversial issues. And you get a lot of people who want to do the separation thing and, you know, do the good and evil thing. So I'm going to write a book and I'll sort of leave that for today and stay out of the controversy.
No, thanks.
So go ahead, Alan.
No, thanks, Grant. You can stop sharing. You know, I've heard you give this a couple of times and I get it, but you're sort of saying to me two different things. You're saying first, it's all consciousness and that's what it is. And that's sort of like the simple answer. And then you're saying, which I really believe, this is much more complex, much more multi-layered, much more to it than we can imagine. Yet you're saying it's sort of simple and it's consciousness. So,
but it's consciousness. But consciousness can be very complex. You can make whatever you want. You can make a very complex, the universe is getting more complex, but the entire universe is built out of consciousness. There is not like the physical world and the conscious world. We want to separate consciousness and the same, that consciousness is created by the brain. No, brain creates consciousness. Consciousness creates brain. Consciousness creates everything. And consciousness can be built into a very elaborate thing, a very elaborate world. It's all still consciousness.
I know, but it's also consciousness is great. And I think we all get that. That's Deepak Chopra. He interviewed me about my book and he just says, well, it's all consciousness. What do we need these specification of ETs or X or interdimensional? And I'm saying to you, maybe Deepak, let's break it down. There is something out there, UAPs, whatever you want to call it. I was taken or abducted. There was a mark on my leg, a physical mark. We can say it's all consciousness and it's great. And I agree with you, but let's start to get into the mechanics if we can. It doesn't mean it's not all consciousness, but let's just get into the breaking, you know, let's try to undo the glue that of that conscious sphere. And so I'm saying, yeah, it's great. It's all consciousness. And with our intelligence and what we know of it, what else? How do we break it down? I guess I'm asking.
But you still want to go back to the physical world. I had a physical mark on my body, and that's still the same thing. You with hypnosis, you can make a mark appear on a body. And that's why I say, like, it's the same thing when you start looking at the beings. Why does an alien? I just did a book on triangles. Why do beings put triangles on your arm?
Right.
What is that, an abduction maneuver or like a propulsion symbol or like what? I mean, they're doing this stuff because you look at your arm and you say, I got a mark. Oh, that's for real. I mean, it's the same. It's the idea. It's all built out of consciousness, whether it's the physical, everything's built out of consciousness and you can make it complex. And it's almost like the idea is it's all signaling. Remember when they asked Bigelow, what was Skinwalker Ranch about? And he said, it was all signaling. It was all gaming and signaling. So that's what they're doing. They're teaching you a lesson by building this sort of consciousness thing. But you have to act in your world because you're in a physical world. So they got to give you the messages in the physical world, but it's still consciousness.
But I know, and I get that. And it's all consciousness. It doesn't matter ETs or gurus in India or channels. It's all consciousness. But let's look at when you say it's complex, and I believe that it really is more complex than maybe we can comprehend. What is that complexity? How do we break it down? I know I'm still looking at it physically, but how do we delineate the complexity of this phenomena, which is transcending anything that of reality that we think it is?
Okay, well, that's where I said you go to the vibration idea, that right. If you're in the physical world, you're vibrating at a very low level. So if you change your vibration, which you'll get in psychedelics, where that's a first signal you get is something's about to happen because you're like vibrating, like, and DMT, the same thing where people will talk about they were on a rocket, like they were shot off of this rocket into wherever. And so they're building it at that level, but still it's you're building the world, the physical world out of consciousness. It's just a lower vibrating realm than everything else. So when you go into the other world, it's the whole idea we're Ron Johnson said he was taken to his mother in the spirit world, and he's in the spirit world and he starts describes things that UFO experiencers, a building that's 10 times the size inside as it is outside, which UFO experiencers describe. And these things cannot happen. Like when an experiencer describes Chris Bledsoe or Terry Lovelace, when they describe Terry Lovelace, it's about 30 feet across and he goes inside the craft and it's the size of a football field inside. This is not a physical world. This is something's right. And that's what the anomalies show is when you see things like that, you got to go, something's wrong. We've got one of the blocks wrong. We're not understanding something here.
But I want to understand it. I do want to understand something. Can you give us a little something besides just being all consciousness? I mean, how do we break some of it down into
listen to the experiencers? That's where you get it. I mean, you start listening to the experiencers and you get them describing buildings that are inside, or Ron Johnson having the alien take them to the spirit world. You start realizing, is this the spirit world? Is this the same thing? I mean, and we start to realize we've got this wrong, we got that wrong. And the experiences are the people you got to listen to because they are the ones that are interacting with the phenomena. That's where I say the UFO, we want the physical thing. We're going to do the TTSA thing. We're going to get some more sensors and we're going to get some more UFO sightings. How many green ones, how many fast ones and slow ones. It's not until you talk to the experiences, you see these anomalies where people start describing they're taken in the spirit world. They saw the being in the last lifetime, all this kind of stuff. And you start to realize it's a multiple life thing. There's different vibrations, there's different levels. The 80% of all UFO experiences have out-of-body experiences. That right. alone should tell you like something's connected here. And when you start looking at this, because we always want to go to the physical thing. We want to go to the physical because it's it's a technological world. We want technology. We want to go fast. We want
to. So I think what you're saying to me or to everyone is like, if we really want to understand this, we have to realize there's more to us as human beings. We're not just flesh and blood. We're not just this limited being in time, space. We are more.
Yeah. What they told me is you have not got a clue. I won't tell you how they swore, but they'd say you have not got a clue. You think you understand how it works. You haven't got a clue. Not only is what you've got wrong, it's exactly the opposite of what you've been told. And that's the thing is we've got to start to realize we've got a lot of building blocks wrong. We're assuming a lot of things that aren't right. And the anomalies will lead you. So you look at the experiencers and you look at the anomalies, like the thing of waking up people, even that thing, like, why would they wake people up and then put them back to sleep again? What, you know, why do ghosts have clothes on? Why do aliens not have clothes on? Why do aliens, if they're physical beings, why don't they have sex organs? Why don't they have belly buttons? Why don't they get older? You start looking at these things, you go, like, something's wrong here. We're missing the boat as to what's going on here. Because aliens, if they're physical flesh and blood, should be getting older. They should have sex organs. They should be wearing clothes. And like, why does a ghost wear clothes? It's almost like this signaling thing that the ghosts, the aliens, they're all coming from this sort of higher vibrating realm. And they're coming to teach us, to raise our consciousness so we can get understand how the world actually works. We have no idea how the world works. We just assume we understand how the world works.
How the world works and who we are as you, who we really are, really the essence. So
the whole reality, we think the world is, we're back at 1492 thinking the world is flat and the sun goes around the earth. We're making a bunch of assumptions that are absolutely wrong. And the anomalies, if you look at the anomalies, we'll tell you, we must have this, time and space, we must have it wrong. There's no way we got that right. The fact that they're coming, they're popping in. Kid Green says, how do they pop in and pop out? So you hear that from a high-level guy and you go, hey, that's a clue. They're popping in and popping out instead of flying here. They're popping into this world, they're popping out. Maybe they're just popping and they're here and they're just coming from a different reality. We start to learn, but you can only learn by listening to the anomalies of the experiences. That's where it all comes down to. And that's why I think I was given this was this weird anomaly. It had nothing to do with me seeing a UFO. It was putting me down. So I started to question, something's wrong. This thing should not be here. This should not be flying around if the world is the way I think it is. And I started to do the search, and they're trying to make us all curious. That's all they're trying to do is make you curious.
I know.
They're not giving you the answers, and they're making you go and dig and find answers for yourselves.
I know. Thank you, Grant. I mean, that's why you wrote The Theory of Wow for my book, because you just dwell on, like, we have to open up to this curiosity. But you know, there's so much you're doing, so much work. You're really one of the leaders in the field. I appreciate, you know, you taking it in this direction, because certainly the nuts and bolts direction doesn't have answers. Now we're getting close to some answers. How can people find you, Grant, and look for your latest book, Triangles and Everything?
My books are at It's All Connected, one word, which is the oneness idea. It's All Connected. And you just Google search books and it's all connected. All the books are there. I have a book on Canadian UFOs coming out. I have a book on triangles that just came out. And then I have this book on the 11 things, paranormal things that were given to us, like LSD and different things where
rock and roll, even
spiritualism, the Fox sisters, the beginning of spiritualism, this changed the world, how these things changed the world. So I don't have a Facebook, I don't have a website anymore, but White House UFO is my YouTube channel and Presidential UFO is my Facebook channel.
Great. And I'm going to ask you to come on a Clubhouse next week, okay? And talk about more about this.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Grant Cameron, ladies and gentlemen, one of the real leaders in trying to understand the phenomena on new levels of consciousness, really. I think you're one of the leaders in that field. Thanks.
I think we're all there, Alan. I think if you looked at yourself 10 years ago and myself 10 years ago, we are miles ahead of where we are, but we still have no clue. I mean, we're making ground. I think we're moving along.
Right. I know when I wrote my book, you said, well, maybe this is not about aliens. I said, Grant, I just wrote a whole book about that. And then it's like, you're right. This is not just about aliens. It's
all labels too, right? I mean, like extraterrestrial could literally mean to someone anything beyond the terrestrial perceivable 3D, right? And a lot of these ETs probably even utilize interdimensional technology just to travel, right? So it's interchangeable, really. It's kind of just how you want to label it.
That's where I say the left brain comes in. The left brain that dominates the world wants to put everything into the nuts and bolts and into language. The right brain has no language, but because it's language, it wants to label everything. It wants to give it levels and names and stuff like that. And that's where we get pull it back into the physical.
Why don't you join us on the remote viewing course I'm doing? It's coming up October 7th on Portal to Ascension. There's a lot of left brain, right brain I'm talking about there.
Yeah. Okay.
So send me I'll call link. You. Thank Grant Cameron, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.